Welcome to Talking Hoosier Baseball. We are recording this on Monday, April 13th, 2026. I'm Carl James, joined by Chris Feeney, Zach Horwitz, and Cassidy Palmer. Cass and I had some work conflicts, so we're starting this one later than usual, and we will be making it shorter than our usual show. You will need to go to iubase.com later this week to get an update on our pick'ems, if you're interested. But I will give you a little hint, which is right now, Zach, Cass, and I are tied for the season. So this is going to be an interesting race to the finish. It was a 2-2 week for the Hoosiers, but felt much worse than that. Hanging on for a midweek win over Ball State and a dominant performance at Maryland on Friday had us look it up as a group. Then a poor start on Saturday snowballed into a run rule loss, and the Hoosiers came up two outs short of sealing a series win on Sunday as the bullpen ran dry of trusted arms. A two-run lead flipped to a two-run walk-off loss with one swing of the bat. Chris, we still give out red belts no matter how bad, and the Hoosiers did win twice this week. Who earned the red belts for week 9?
I'm getting tired of hearing this, though, because usually it's Cass going, well, we haven't had a great week, but we still get red belts. At least this week I got to hear it from Carl, but it's the same thing. You know, well, we still get to give out red belts. 2-2, correct. You know, Carl laid it out for us. But, man, getting run ruled by Maryland, that's rough. That one hurt. You know, I did not like playing those guys. I wanted to sweep. Started off nice, you know, home run derby on Friday. But Saturday, just, it wasn't in the cards. And then Sunday, making that comeback, you know, taking the lead, you know, just having it there at the end. And, you know, it's just, it's been a season of watching leads disappear. And this was just another one. And it was rough, frustrating. But again, there were some bright spots. One really bright spot was Fielder. The defensive red belt, the Tony Butler Award, is going to be Caleb Koski. I mean, I could pull up five catches throughout the week, and two of them were really spectacular behind Jackson Yarberry in you know, in that Sunday late in the game when we're holding on to that lead for dear life. Grand Central Station on the bases every inning, and left field is not an easy position to play. You know, it's hard to get the ball when it's coming off the end of the bat, the angles. He got great jumps on balls. I mean, he's been doing it all year, really. And he definitely absolutely gets it for the Tony Butler Award for this week. For our Alex Dickerson, I don't even think that this guy knew he was going to be the highlight man of the action. But unfortunately, it did happen for a reason which we don't like. You know, Hogan Denny giving 100,000% of his body for that ball, running into that wall. That second angle was rough. If anybody hasn't seen that second angle, my man hit it hard. And I don't know what's behind that, you know, padding. If it was padding, you couldn't really see what kind of wall it was. But, you know, Hogan definitely looked shook up. I'm glad he came out of the game. I'm glad he didn't play. But Aiden Krauss in his, you know, replacement, RBI double to tie it up in the third on Sunday. Go ahead, homer in the fifth. And then an add-on run after a single. They throw the ball down the line. It bangs around the corner like pinball, and he scores from first. I have not seen that too many times. We've seen a lot of wild stuff this season, honestly. But I can't say I've seen too many times a pickoff throw first going, an error, and the guy scoring. So Aiden, 100% effort, gets the Alex Dickerson Award. And for a pitching award, Jackson Yarberry, to me, is the choice. I know it didn't work out in the ninth. I understand. But the four innings he threw before that, walking a tightrope every inning, guys on, in and out, trusting his defense. I know he walked a couple. I think he might have hit one, but he wasn't giving in. And he gave all he had. And, you know, it ended up the line doesn't look as good as it was if he hadn't come back out in the ninth. But I think they were just saying, you know what, this is it. We'll give it a shot. You know, I've heard Mercer talk about plan B. And, you know, plan A for that was Yarberry. And he was sticking to plan A. So I guess he just rolled it as long as he could. Hell of a job, though. Hell of a job. 80 pitches, four innings. I think it ended up 90-something pitches total for the outing. Really nice work. He never gave in, and it just didn't work out. But that's something I'm going to remember. This season's not going to go down in hang a banner, you know, wall history. But something I'm going to remember is him coming off that mound in the eighth inning. Pumped up, jacked up, got out of that. We still got the lead, and him joining his teammates in the and it just didn't work out in the ninth. But those were our red belts. You know, frustrated Maryland series or not. Caleb Koski, Aiden Krause, and Jackson Yawberry. We're going to send it over to Carl for a Big Ten update following the belts.
Yep. The only thing I want to say about the Big Ten is, weirdly enough, in the actual standings when you go through the tiebreakers, IU improved from 13th to 12th in the Big Ten this weekend, if you can believe that. but that's because there is currently essentially a six-way tie for ninth place right now. So there are six teams that are at 333, which basically means they're averaging a series loss, one-two series loss in all of their series. Some have played five, some have played six. IU's going to be off this coming weekend. Any of the teams in that group that win their series will move ahead of IU. Those that lose their series 1-2 will stay even with IU if any of them get swept. And I think one of them is playing UCLA. Then they will fall behind IU. So IU is obviously in its is going to be playing Abilene Christian out of conference, and the Hoosiers now have six non-conference games before they get back into that final stretch of conference play. So kind of what I want to talk about right now is what can they do in this next week and change to be able to collect the wins they need to play in Omaha. I mean, to get themselves in a position to collect the wins that they're going to need after that to make it into the tournament. What are they going to need to do during this non-conference period? Winning or losing doesn't affect that in the next six games, but what is it we want to see from the team? Who wants to jump in on that?
Yeah, I'll start off. I guess Friday night was a great representation of this, where Indiana scored two runs in the first two innings. They hit five, I believe the number was five home runs on that game on that Friday night, with Tony Newbeck behind them. He threw six innings, four hits, one run. And then one thing that I've seen around social media that I actually do probably agree with is that Gavin Siebold came in on that Friday night and he finished over two innings. I think it was two and a third. That was with Indiana having a 5 or 6 run lead. So that was something that they maybe could have saved looking back. But at the time they wanted to lock down the win on game one. Game two was kind of similar. They scored three in the first, ended up getting run ruled in that one, but Regan Rivera definitely did not have his best stuff. He only finished the first. So I guess my recap here is just that they need to start fast. And then behind that, they need to pitch well, which they started fast in the first two. And then that final game of the series, they fought back. They were in a 2-run hole early, came back into it, had the lead going to the ninth. So just an overall outlook, I don't think that they played that poorly this weekend. Saturday was just they found themselves in such a deep hole from the start of Rivera. But I mean, overall at this point, you don't feel good about the season. I was made aware that Indiana is actually in the Big Ten tournament right now, as crazy as that may sound. And I think that has to do with the way they've lost these games rather than the amount of losses that they do have. But what they need to change or what they need to have happen to win some games the rest of the year is to start fast.
Well, and I think some of the, and Carl, correct me if I'm wrong, I think some of it with the being in the Big Ten tourney discussion still is the fact that the West Coast teams, by and large, maybe outside of Washington, are beating the hell out of everybody.
Right.
And so, because looking at this, even up to the seventh place team in the conference is under 500. So, like,
Yeah, and it's
Having those teams has changed the landscape
right. Well, not
for Big Ten tournament.
and UCLA being this good, which UCLA has, even when they were in the Pac-12, they weren't this good. This is something new. And USC is at a level of good that they haven't been at in decades. You know, when obviously USC's won more national championships than anybody in the country. So they're, I mean, there's, they have that to hang their hat on. But that's not who USC's been the last 15 years. And they're essentially coming close to that again. So those two programs in particular, and then Oregon being as good as they've been. Yeah, you've got a small group of teams that are beating up to an even larger scale than what we're
Yeah,
normally seeing.
I watched the Sunday rubber match between Oregon and Nebraska. I tuned in for a little bit. That's Oregon pulled it out 5-4, and they were playing from behind most of the game. That's like a series that I look back on. Indiana could beat a team like that in years past. Like, that's a series that they totally take. And Nebraska is kind of that team this year. They're second in the Big Ten Conference. They're 12-3 in the conference, and their RPI is 27. Like, they're having an incredible year. But yeah, it's just been a down year in terms of the results. But this team and the talent that's on the team, and that they're not as bad as the record shows it.
And unfortunately, I think in this six game out of conference stretch, I don't want to say this is going to probably come across wrong. But I almost don't care about wins and losses in this six game stretch. Like, what I want to see, I want to see kind of reset the pitching, get everybody to even keel, get on whatever schedule you're wanting to close out the season. And you know what? If it means throwing some guys out there for more innings than they normally do, the ones who aren't the go-to weekend guys, go for it.
Yeah, I think that's especially true this coming week. Indiana has two midweek games. They're going to need Pete Haas. They're going to need Kellen English and Javi Carrera throwing innings on Tuesday and Wednesday. That's like a huge outlook going forward for years in the future. They need this week, much
And
more than the results.
even guys like Evan O'Neill, who we've hardly seen, throw him out there, see what he can do. And if he gets lit up, he gets lit up.
He's
Like,
only been lit up once, and that was the very first time. His other two times he's been fine. And the one thing he's been doing is he's been throwing strikes.
So
And
throw them
it's,
out there, see what
yeah.
they can do. Like,
I mean, imagine if Evan O'Neill had thrown that ninth inning.
It's
We
kind of
might be
like,
talking about a series win.
we know what we have with some of our guys. Maybe there's some, diamonds in the rough we don't know about.
I
Maybe
mean, the same
I would
fact, he
assume,
made.
though, that the coaching staff would have had him out there already.
I mean, he may have given up, two singles and a homer and lost the game. That's very possible. But it's also possible that he wouldn't have done that.
But to me, the fact that they had to throw, had, or at least felt like they had to throw Yarberry back out there for the ninth in that situation, like, because to me, I'm sitting there. You've gotten four great innings out of him. Like, this is the deepest he's gone all year. He did his job. It might not have always been pretty, but he did his job. He got it done. You've got to have one more guy you can go to for an inning
Yeah.
Yep.
to
That
lock
you
answers the
down.
question, I guess. That answers the question. That's why he came back out, because of what plan B was going to be.
And so to me, it's use these six games to figure out who among the non-regular weekend guys you can trust in that situation at least somewhat to finish out the season.
Now, here's a thought. Maybe they need to be a little bit more open to some risk. And what I mean by that is, and this may have to come a little bit in how they do pitch calling, be willing to say, you know what, get your best pitch over the plate. And yes, yes, the strategy is these pinpoint locations to try to come, but at some point you got to determine, we're 6 months off from this guy being able to do this. So we need to have this guy pitch based on what he's able to do now. Am I off in that? I mean, Zach, you've played baseball more recently than any of us.
No, I think in this day and age, especially in Major League Baseball, I don't know if it's the same as college, probably a little less. There's too much reliance on these analytics and these statistics and all this. You just got to go out there and throw the ball. Kellen English, for example, that kid can throw the ball almost 100 miles per hour as a freshman. If you're not going to throw him out there because he can't throw a strike or he only has one pitch that day or something, I mean, at this point in time, especially, they just got to throw him into the fire. And I totally agree with that. Everyone needs their chance, and they got to get in the game.
I mean, Jackson Jarbery had one pitch on Sunday. He had one pitch. He could throw a slider. His fastball, he couldn't get it. He threw his fastball over like twice. And
I was
it got
sitting
through
there.
four. Got
Yeah.
through four.
He got through four. After the first, actually, even in recent games that he's pitched, he's struggled in his multi-inning outings. When he pitches one inning, he's been great. Multi-innings, he has trouble. They sent him out for that second inning. I'm like, all right, he's got to get through this. He let up, I think he was two hits and a walk or something. He gets out of the inning. Then they sent him out for third. I'm like, oh my goodness, they're really trusting this guy. He got out of it again. In the fourth inning, he goes in for the ninth to save the game and didn't finish it off. And eventually, Michael Sarhat came in and the game ended there. But I mean, this was just a performance of all heart. Something that you never see. This guy threw 91 pitches, which was more than both starters for Indiana on Saturday and Sunday.
It's
Granted, Rivera
amazing.
didn't have his best stuff, but he pitched as a reliever or the closer of the team that usually pitches one, maybe two innings, threw 91 pitches, where only Tony Newbeck, who threw 98 on Friday, had more than him this weekend as a reliever, your closer.
Well, he's lengthened out now. Maybe throw him on the weekend. It can't hurt.
Well, to me, unless, and this is where I get into the, I am sure there's insider information that we don't have, things that the team's considering, but I would highly consider, if possible, not throwing Yarberry at all Tuesday, Wednesday.
No, I'm
Definitely
saying
not
start him.
Tuesday
He's
with the
got to be
number, but
shut.
like,
He's got to be shut
he's
down.
got to be shut
Sunday,
down until
start
the
him.
weekend.
It'll be move
But
Thomas to
it's,
Saturday and start Yarberry on
or
Sunday. Why
Or see
not?
if you
Also,
can start him on Saturday.
that
Start
comes
your.
with Indiana being in such a hole in terms of the bullpen, where Rivera went one inning and Mostolski, he let up two runs. He threw 58 pitches. So I mean, those guys usually can just piggyback each other and finish a game for all, like, or Yarbrough has to throw one inning after that. That they were in a tough spot going into Sunday. Yarbrough picked up, I mean, I guess I'd say two or three innings that maybe he wouldn't have to if they had better pitching the days before. So they put themselves in that situation. It's unfortunate that they couldn't finish it off. They needed, what was it, another out, or maybe it was two outs when the game ended.
We
But
only got one total out, if I remember.
right. So I mean, they were that close with a thin bullpen. If they get a better start on Saturday from two guys that they've relied on, then they'd probably be in a better situation on Sunday.
And that's with
And
Thomas completely switching it up after, what was it, two outs in the first? The first eight guys got on, whatever the hell it was. And then he mowed down like
Lights
11
out.
out of 12. I mean, that was impressive for him to flip the switch like that.
Well, and that's the thing. I don't think, and the results sometimes haven't shown it, but I don't think this staff is that far off. There's just a couple of key guys where you're kind of playing with fire. Like with Rivera. When he's on, he can go 4 or 5 innings without much difficulty. But
One time.
when he's when he's off, you're hoping to get him through one
I'm tired
without
of
too
that
much
experiment.
damage.
Well, I would rather let Yarbrough move into the starting three or Mostowski. I think Rivera has worn out his welcome.
Well, there's another issue too, and that is, I think this team is built, the pitching staff's built a little wrong from a pitching profile perspective. We have a bunch of fly ball pitchers. And this team plays in Bart Kauffman Field, and then even worse, just had to go out to College Park.
Yeah.
I mean, they couldn't use Jacob Vogel because his fly ball rate is so high that bad hits are just going to fly out of the park against him.
Plays well in Omaha.
No, great. Exactly. I mean, but we're Vogel's going to be a huge piece if they can make it out there. But boy, miss the days of guys like Gabe Bierman, guys who could throw a sinker.
Well, Paulie Milko, Tommy Summer. I mean, we had so many.
But that was the thing I was actually comparing ground ball and fly ball rates between the Indiana pitchers. All the Indiana pitchers had a fly ball rate that was higher than the ground ball rate. All the Maryland pitchers, even though they had been getting hit, their ground ball rate was much higher than their fly ball rate.
Okay.
Which, if I'm recruiting, especially in College Park, yeah, I'm definitely going to recruit that way because,
Yeah.
and
Fly balls are going
yeah,
up.
and. And I think it's something that, as he builds his first real recruiting class, Myers, I think, needs to try to get more of that profile, more of that sinker ball profile, more of that ground ball profile. I mean, we looked at it last couple of years where it's just, for the most part, they've solved it with Siebold. They determined that, it was the throwing the cutter over the plate was his problem, and they stopped doing that and corrected some of his mechanics, and he's done pretty well since then.
You look at that the other way too, with the way that the roster was built, that last year you had Devin Taylor, Corbin Dickerson, Jake Hanley, and Hogan Denny in the same offense that could put any pitch out of the park. And now I don't have the stats up here with the home runs, but I feel like Cole Decker is probably in the top three or top four in home runs on the team. And that's like as much of a contact bat as you have, him and Will Moore probably. But they just don't have that. They don't have the pitchers that roll ground balls, and they don't have the hitters that can hit it out of the park in a hitter-friendly ballpark. So it's just all around just not a recipe for success in the place that they play.
And honestly, from an offensive perspective, I wasn't too upset on the week. The offense was stagnant at times, but it was largely doing what it needed to do. Need to cut down on those stupid double plays. Ah, the number of double plays turned.
I thought you would have been happy with our pitches, though. I feel like we got a lot more of the don't give up a hit with two outs this week.
Yes,
I did notice that.
that was better.
I did notice.
Closing out the innings efficiently. I haven't pulled the numbers. Like Carl said, it was a crazy work day, but
I mean, just from watching and listening, I could tell a lot of times, two outs and we get out of it. There was plenty of times earlier in the year that we haven't, so there was some improvement there.
Oh,
Yeah.
absolutely.
So yeah, when you dig into the details, the team is there's a lot of things the team's improving with. It's just missing like what that 23 team had, that find a way to win. That
The
just something
uncanny ability.
that one team that at times was like they were getting beat by bad teams. And it's frustrating, but they somehow figured it out late and found a way to win. And then they started doing it against good teams. So.
And like we were saying, like this team was not far off from beating both the number two and the number four team in the co getting at least one win
Yeah.
in those away series against the number two and number four teams in the conference.
Yeah. Several competitive games in those series.
And throw in the could have had a win at UNC, could have had a win neutral site versus LSU, like,
Oh, we add one of those every week, huh? Could have had this, could have had that, could have been
yeah,
this.
and that's something we haven't,
Frustrating now.
frustrating as hell, but it's something we haven't seen from an Indiana team in, I think, kind of the whole time we've been covering. There's always been this, at least that underlying ability to grit out the win.
Yeah, I said that before we started. Why does this season feel like one of the worst that I can remember? The one I went back to was 16, but I feel like that we just kind of nothing was clicking from the start,
Right.
and a lot of these games have just been when you have an opportunity to win and lose, it makes it worse. I don't care what you say, you know. It's just yeah, run rule's embarrassing, but a walk-off granny hurts more.
I think where you go from here, for me at least, is that you have such a young team that you need to just have these experiences where this coming week you play two midweek games. You're going to have to get guys that are in the game that don't usually play. This weekend is kind of a wash. I mean, they're going to play three games. They hopefully will win the series against Abilene Christian. But when I look at this in total, they play a midweek game at Louisville, which is like a big stadium, big atmosphere. I don't know about a Tuesday, but then I want them to really take in that Wrigley Field game. That's an experience that not many get. And then just following that, when they're playing at Purdue, you get a taste of the rivalry. And also, Purdue's playing really well. Like that place is going to be absolutely packed out Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of that series. And then you finish it off at home. So the season is lost in terms of the biggest picture, of course. But there's a lot that you can still take these minor
Oh, yeah.
details out of this, especially with that with the young group that they have.
And I'd really just like to see a lot of the freshmen pitch some serious innings this week in particular with the double midweek.
See what you
Now,
got.
of course, that's really incumbent. They're going to have to throw strikes, and that's the part that Carrera and English are going to have to find the strike zone. Because the one thing is, like, you can say I'm going to throw you two innings, but if you can't throw a strike, you just can't. They can't do that. So, all right. I think that means we've pretty much wrapped it up. So, anything else we needed to cover, anybody? All right. Well, we'll call this a podcast. We'll say thank you for listening to this episode of Talking Hoosier Baseball. For more on Indiana University baseball, hit up iubase.com. For Cassidy Palmer, Zach Horowitz, and Chris Feeney, I'm Carl James. See you at the BART.